Tappers, what's going on? It is Tuesday, December 11th. We are 14 days away from Christmas. If you've done your Christmas shopping, if you have not, get them the gift of a Snow Tap Podcast listenership. It's free. It saves you a lot of money. Gets you going there. So make sure you get that. Some of us may have been are slacking on the Christmas shopping, but that is a tradition unlike any other. So not surprising there. All right. Excited to get going today. A little bit more free and loose than we were yesterday. If you listen to the Wisconsin Sports 5 Minute Man, I did three topics in 5 minutes. Each, not just 5 minutes. I could have done three topics in 5 minutes, trust me. But we did it in 15. I was tight on time, and I shouldn't be tight on time. I'm taping this Monday night, but I do not have that much battery left on my computer, and it is in the bedroom where my girlfriend is sleeping. So could be interesting, but I think we'll be able to get through the podcast. We're going to talk about the Packers. Whether you want them to make the playoffs or if you want them to lose out to get a draft pick, we'll just talk about sort of how the fans are reacting to that. We'll talk more about, I guess, the fans and then the possibilities of both, because I think there was a lot of noise in the media and in the sort of radio caller, sports radio markets today about that topic. Then we have the Milwaukee Bucks taking care of business tonight against the Cavs. Second time that the Bucks have now won without Giannis. They're 2-0 without Giannis. What does that say about the team? And then also we'll talk about the winter meeting, some of the little hush-hush rumors about the Brewers thus far. All right, so the Packers, I think the theme of today, of the week, is so you're saying there's a chance. You're going to hear it all week. You're going to hear the drops from Dumb and Dumber. We're going to do this all over again. I mean, this was 2 years ago. It was the same sort of thing with Run the Table. Run the Table was a little more, I think you felt the team a little bit better about the team. I think this year has been so different because of the Mike McCarthy saga, because of Aaron Rodgers, you know, sort of his attitude at times. I think there was a lot of just ill will and ill feelings towards this team. So there are people who are like, you're not a real fan if you are cheering for the Packers to lose and to get a draft pick. And to that I say, it's your choice. It really is. At the end of the day, it's your choice. And I'm not saying I'm going to flip this on you, but I'm kind of going to flip this on you. You can either choose to cheer for the Green Bay Packers and cheer that they win every game, as you probably should. Or you can just be a loser on Sunday and cheer for defeats. I just don't have that in me. Maybe you guys do. Maybe you do, but I fucking don't. I don't have that. I'm not going to say someone isn't a real fan because they're cheering losses. But at the same time, I just can't do that until it's like officially over, right? Like when the Bucks were really bad with Larry Drew and they were going to get a top pick, there was competitive losses. We were doing podcasts back then. Mitch and I were talking all the time about how we wanted the Bucks to competitively lose, that we wanted them to play well enough but then lose in the fourth quarter. That was the whole motto. When the team is that bad, then yes, we should be cheering it on. Like if you're a Jets fan, if you're a Raiders fan, 49ers, all those teams won last week, I'd be pissed. I'd be pissed that my team won. I'd be pissed the Cardinals beat the Packers last week because I know we're not going to make the playoffs. But there is that chance that we make the playoffs. I realize that there are consequences with making the playoffs. But let me remind you, the Packers would be the 17th pick, I believe, overall with the NFL draft. That they would be one of the 12 teams to make the playoffs. They actually would be picking 18, excuse me. But they would be the lowest seed, lowest overall seed. They'd be the 6th seed. They would be 8-7. They'd have the lowest amount of wins, barring something crazy happening in the NFC or in the AFC. The Packers win a playoff game, that would boost them up a little bit, but the odds of that happening maybe are small. Now you'd add to the fact that the Saints will be in there, and the Saints could pick, I don't know, anywhere from 28 to 32, and the Packers would have two picks to package. They have multiple picks in the first four rounds. They can move up. I feel like there are enough edge rushers. There's enough talent in this draft from a defensive side of things that drafting 18 is really no different than drafting 12 in this draft. At least from first glance. Now maybe that changes as it goes on, but if they think that's the case, then Brian Gutekunst is going to move up. Brian Gutekunst will move up to make a pick. They have enough picks. They have enough roster talent that they can make a move up in the draft if the Packers so choose to. And I feel like people are just discrediting that. And you're like, well, if they lose out or they lose a couple more games, they're probably going to get a top 10, top 15 pick. And then you couple that with the pick you have with the Saints, and you could probably use that pick to move up essentially in the first round again and kind of have a BJ Raji, Clay Matthews type draft. Sure, that's all fine and true. But at the same time, you play to win the game, man. I understand that the talent gap, there is a little bit of a talent gap this year with the Packers. I fully get that. I think they need help in a variety of ways, but I think Brian Gutekunst and the management team now has more of an affinity for free agents. I do not think this team will put together a roster with string with a new coach. I think they're going to want to make a statement with whomever the new coach is, whether that is Joe Philbin, whether that is, you know, Matt LaFleur, whether that's Lincoln Riley, whomever. They're going to want to have a team that's well-equipped to make a run. So they're going to have guys they're targeting. You know, maybe a Golden Tate to run the slot, who I think would be a really nice fit for the Packers, which others have mentioned. You know, there's a variety of edge rushers. That's the other thing. You want them to tank in the draft because there's so many good edge rushers. Like, there are a lot of good edge rushers in free agency, too. Like, there are savvy moves to be made. Brashad Breeland could come back. I think that's a no-brainer. You just have opportunities to bring different dudes back and to also add to your team. And I think that's what the Packers are getting at. I think they can make that happen. And I don't necessarily think having a little bit higher draft pick will help them. Now, if the Packers were to lose to the Bears, they'd be eliminated. They'd be 6-8-1. And if that were to be the case, then, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with resting Rodgers for the last two games of the season, if he wants to. I think you give him that option. I think Joe Philbin should come to him and say, okay, how's your knee feeling? Do you want to play these last two games? There'll be a lot of definite reaction of Rodgers should sit, and you'll hear a lot of those hot takes, and we can have that conversation next week if the Packers do lose. But it's his choice. At the end of the day, it's his choice. I love fans thinking that these players just will not want to play. You hear it every time from fucking reporters. Don't matter if it's Jason Wilde, Ryan Wood. It doesn't matter. They all will tell you that these players love to play. That's why they do it. That's why this is their job. They're not just going to sit for the good of their team if they want to play. If Rodgers wants to play, then let him go out there. If he wants to play his last two games with Randall Cobb, as looks like Cobb will probably go elsewhere next year, let him do it. Let him have some fun. And yeah, there is an injury risk, and sure. But at the same time, like, that's every fucking game of football. Like, I love this, not to go on a side tangent, but like, you know, it's all these players are pulling out of the college football draft, the college football playoff, or repeat that again. The college football bowl season is being dampened by players leaving. And so other people are like, well, you got to expand the playoffs. And Stu Mandel's like, of the Athletics, like, well, these guys could get hurt in the playoffs. And you're extending the season. That's not going to work. It's like, dude, those games actually matter though. Like, the Camping World Bowl doesn't fucking matter to Will Grier. He's the MVP of that. What else does he have to prove? If you don't have anything else to prove in a bowl game, why go? So that, to me, is a ludicrous sort of correlation there. So yes, Aaron Rodgers probably has nothing to gain by playing New York or Detroit if they do lose this week. But if he wants to play, how are you going to say no? And he'll be like, nah, we're keeping you on the bench. He may want to finish a full season. There's bonuses. There's all sorts of shit that go into that. Don't forget that as well when guys are out there playing. Sometimes it's a money thing, man, and they're just trying to make as much money as possible, and I don't blame them. As for the potential playoff scenario, since we talked a great deal about the other side of this, yes, there is a real chance right now. So, it's the NFC is doing what sometimes happens in these sort of playoff runs, and this has sort of been in a situation the Packers are comfortable in, not the one that I think they've wanted to be in. I think if you were to ask anyone on that roster, they'd be like, we would want to be leading the division, or we'd want to be battling the Bears for that division spot next week. But they're not. They have a game against Chicago that I wouldn't say it's winnable, but Mitch Trubisky doesn't look right. And I think this defense is ball hawking enough where they can make some plays and shorten the field and make it harder. Now, the quick passing game is going to be needed a lot against that Bears rush. And I thought Lucas Patrick did a really good job. If he goes instead of Brian Bulaga, that'd be all right. And Justin McCray will have a hell of a day with Khalil Mack. No question about it. But the Packers would then slide themselves in, and kind of the boogeyman comes. And you look at what you need the rest of the way. You need the Redskins to lose one. Well, Josh Johnson is starting at quarterback for the Redskins this week against Jaguars. I think that's all that needs to be said. So you need one. You need that. You also need the Eagles to lose one. They're pretty much heading into their funeral in Los Angeles. I mean, they are about 1 foot in the grave. I think that if they beat Dallas, I think their whole season, like the whole rest of that season, changes. But that, to me, killed them. They have no secondary left. I think Jared Goff is going to light them up. I expect a major bounce back game from Goff and the Rams. And then you have Carolina. I think they need to lose two. Carolina, again, one. It's Carolina has New Orleans, and New Orleans needs to keep winning to keep pace with the Rams. Now, Carolina also must win Monday night primetime game. Maybe a little rumors of Ron Rivera's job in the balance. I could see Carolina coming out and winning that game, but I still think the Saints get done. Favored a little too high if you've looked at the early lines, by the way. And then you have the Vikings. And the Vikings would have to lose two of their last three. And they've already lost, or three of their last four, they've already lost one. So they've got one out of the way. They lose to Seattle tonight in just a pathetic performance by the Vikings. There's some real issues with DeFilippo and Zimmer. It seems like Zimmer cannot, for whatever reason, he seems like a micromanager with the offense, and he's a defensive guy. That to me is a real problem in a head coach. Just a thought there. They have to play the Dolphins this week at home, but as our guy Murph said, anything's possible with Kirk Cousins, man. And who knows what's going to happen in these next 3 weeks. I mean, Kirk Cousins is the gift that keeps on giving. They have to go to Detroit, which has been a weird place for literally everybody to play. They have to play Chicago in a game that's looking more and more like it's going to mean something for the Bears, with the Cowboys right on their tails. All right, went a little long on the Packers, but kind of doing a make good for Monday's show. Moving to the Bucs. So second straight victory for the Bucs after they take care of the Cavs. No letdown at all. They win by 18. They got close a little bit in the fourth quarter, but the Bucs put their starters back in and were able to get the job done. Malcolm Brogdon and Eric Bledsoe led the way. Eric Bledsoe with a double-double, 20 points, 12 boards. He had a nice day from Sterling Brown as well. Sterling Brown continues to show some things, guys. Keep an eye out for Sterling Brown. I'm not saying I'm here for the Sterling Brown breakout, but I'm also not saying that he's going to just falter. The dude's playing well. He's looking good. He had 10 points, 8 boards today. But yeah, the Bucks did without Giannis. Giannis sat out with a sore neck. Connaughton sat out with a sore knee. Got the guys a couple rest day, 3 games in 4 nights. They will be playing their 4th in 6 on Wednesday night when they go to Indiana, who's won 4 straight. Pacers are a little hot right now, without Victor Oladipo. So giving Giannis a night off is, I think, a great thing, and it's even better when the Bucks can win basketball games. This is now the second game they've won without Giannis in the lineup, and it shows me, at least, and I think it shows the coaching staff of the Bucks, that Giannis is very important to this team. Don't get me wrong, but there's enough guys to sort of hold down the slack when he's gone that they can win games, and they've done it now twice, and I think that Budenholzer will effectively rest Giannis at different points of the year. Just give him a day off to let him get an extra day. I mean, that Toronto game was a killer. And for them to just say, all right, you got a sore neck, like you slept funny on the plane. All right, we got to rest you. That's okay. That's cool with me. I do not expect Giannis to play every game. And you want to give him some days where you can just slow down and just sort of relax. And now he's fresh heading into that Wednesday game. So instead of 4-6 for Giannis, it's 3-6. And that's big, man. That's really big for the rest of the year. And yeah, the Bucks continue to look all right. George Hill and Jason Smith both made their debuts tonight. I didn't think there was anything special from either, but it's early. You got to gel with the team. It's definitely going to take some time with that. George Hill wearing the John Henson tribute sleeves tonight. Shout out to George for that move. All right, wrapping up the show with the Brewer winter meetings. What's going on? What's being talked about? So a couple of interesting things. One thing I want to touch on that I didn't really get the buzz. I didn't get to blog it today, unfortunately. Like I said, tight time frame. But Manny Machado as a dark horse candidate for the Brewers was something Dan Plesac said. Couple of interesting things to unpack there. Number one, obviously, the Manny Machado Brewers rivalry was quite significant throughout the NLCS. It would take a lot of marketing magic, and it would take a lot of positive reinforcement in the media for the Brewers to convince fans that Machado was the right move. It, to me, would be, I always said Aramis Ramirez was our Jack Parkman. Manny Machado would 100% be our Jack Parkman. Like, Euchre would be covering up his mic as he hits a home run and says, I still think he's a prick. Like, and I don't think it will happen. I mean, there's a lot of talk about financial constraints, which that doofus from Bleacher Nation got that right. That guy's such a fuck. I mean, good for him that he got something right about the Brewers having money issues. But that guy can go fuck himself. Here nor there. But here's the thing. Yeah, they have some money issues. So how do you get a Machado deal done? I guess if he maybe signs for something less, he maybe the market value isn't there. You get him for, and then you also deal off some other guys that are making money, like an Eric Thames, and get him moving. Now, the other side of the aisle here, the Corey Kluber deal. Apparently, the Dodgers are obviously involved, of course. Why wouldn't the Dodgers be involved? The Dodgers have to get every person alive to pitch for them and play for them. They just continue to build an all-star team, and frankly, it's a little annoying. But they would have to trade their top prospect, Alex Verdugo. He's the top prospect in their system. Would they really be likely to move him? At some point, these guys, you're going to run out, you're going to have to start paying everybody, and it's just not going to work. So we'll see if they actually, and they weren't going to move, they didn't move Verdugo during the Machado deal that sent him to Los Angeles. So I think they're pretty high on this guy. And now the other thing is people are like, well, Chris Castanhera has to be in the deal for Kluber. Well, the thing is the Indians really don't need a second baseman. I mean, they need outfielders. So J.P. Morosi has said Corey Ray would be the focal point. If Corey Ray is, in fact, focal point, trade that, do that tomorrow. Now, Stearns will have to get, you know, creative with it, but I think if you work a deal that gives, that sheds some money from the Brewers side of things, so getting rid of Thames, adding Corey Ray, and maybe, and I'm sure a few other pieces to get Corey Kluber, that would be amazing. I mean, then you have a bona fide ace, you know, a guy who's done all right. He's an AL pitcher only, so you do have that where even though Interleague muddles that a little bit, people haven't seen Kluber on a regular basis. So that would be a big thing there. And you would hate to lose out to the Dodgers. I know that it's really hard to compete with Los Angeles, so if they do lose out, I'm not going to cry over it. The Brewers have been rumored on so many different pitchers. It's kind of mind-numbing. Would you take a chance on Trevor Bauer, who's kind of a shithead? I don't know. Look, shitheads kind of play in Milwaukee, and shitheads have done all right here. The fan base kind of rallies around shitheads because I think we're all, in a way, our own shithead. And I know I've said that word a lot, but, like, hear me out. I think it has to do with the fact that we all love to drink, right? And when you like to drink, you kind of act like a shithead. And so we know this, and we're able to tolerate it. More so Milwaukee, like the Bucks and the Brewers. Packers, not really. Demarius Randle, no time for that. Demarius Randle talks shit, more shit than anybody in this league, about nothing. He's such an average player. Just another guy who's on the list, if you will. But yeah, Demarius Randle, just get the fuck out of my face. Anyways, but I don't know. I think Trevor Bauer would come a lot cheaper. I think Corey Ray for Trevor Bauer is a reasonable deal and a deal I think you could make. And then you have a young pitcher who just throws gas. I mean, that is a David Stern staple right there. There are also some interest in Daniel Murphy. I'm not really about that life. Daniel Murphy, he's horrible defensively. I don't know why the Brewers, with all the shifting and everything they do, would add someone like that. I would just rather keep Travis Shaw at second base and Mike Moustakas play third. Because, like, Murphy, to me, doesn't have a fit. I mean, the guy is a consummate pro, clubhouse leader. I do think you'd get a lot of backlash from the LGBTQ community in here in Milwaukee, a team who did a pride night, and Murphy has come out pretty vehemently against gay marriage and gay rights, and he really hasn't backed down from it. Not been a guy who's sort of changed his tune. It's always been his way of life. So again, another interesting PR standpoint for the Brewers, which they really haven't waded their waters in. It would also be surprising from the fact that Mark Ananasio is a known liberal. He's a contributor to Democratic parties. He's trying to get the 2020 DNC convention to be here in the city of Milwaukee. So again, that would be a weird thing for Ananasio to spin as someone who is a Democrat and as someone who contributes to liberal causes. It would just be, it'd be very interesting to see. I don't want Daniel Murphy, but that's a whole other side of it that at least has to be considered. Obviously Wally Waukesha he'd be the dream, right? There'd be Daniel Murphy jerseys would sell out in every Waukesha Dick's Sporting Goods that exists, if there is one that does. But yes, that we'll see. Winter meetings are always, there's a lot of rumors flying. Who knows? JT Realmuto could get traded to the Mets when this podcast goes up. They're trying to make a deal with Noah Syndergaard going to the Yankees of all places. I have no idea what the fuck's going on with the Yankees and Mets doing a deal. I feel like that's like cats and dogs sleeping together. That's like, I don't know. I could have went somewhere else with that, and I'm going to hold off, and I'm going to show some restraint. So thanks for tuning in. Appreciate it as always. Visit us on StoneTapWI. It's a website. Mitchie and I will be in the booth together for Wednesday's show. We're going to be doing Tabbing the Keg. Excited to talk to him. Maybe we'll do a little more Bucks, get a little deeper on the Bucks, since I promised that like 2 weeks ago. It didn't happen. But who knows? Brewers will probably make a fucking move, and then we'll have to do that as our main lead. All right, take care, guys. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.